Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to NPR News. I'm Angela Davis. Glad to have you join us today. A quick reminder that it is the final day of our fall member drive here at NPR, and we are down to the final hours. Make a donation at nprnews.org or by calling us at 800-227-2811. On this last day of the member drive, we do have a special challenge this morning. If we raise $75,000 between 7 a.m. and 10 a.m., we will unlock $15,000 from the Member Challenge Fund. And right now, we have just another $36,000 to go. A lot of you woke up this morning feeling generous and focused on maintaining quality journalism, and we thank you. So as we count down to 10 a.m., make a donation now at nprnews.org or call us at 800-227-2811. Right now, I want to talk about essential workers. During the early months of the COVID-19 pandemic, many of us worked from home to prevent the spread of the virus. But essential workers, including healthcare, transportation, and grocery store employees, continued to go to work in person. Now, with vaccines widely available, we're in a new phase of the pandemic, but essential workers are still struggling. This week, I'm checking in with essential workers, including a hospital employee who I first spoke with in April of 2020. And right now, I have Mary Fosvick with me. Mary drives a school bus for a company that contracts with the Anoka Hennepin School District, and she started driving to pay for college back in 1992. Then she left to raise her children and returned to driving about 4 years ago. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi. I understand you just finished your morning route, and so tell me, how did it go today?
Today was actually pretty typical. I was introduced to Mr. Squishy, the stuffed hamster, by my cute little third grader. Got hugs from one of my newer kids on the bus, which is, it always surprises me because the kids come up from behind you. Yeah, and it's one of those, you know, we're not to touch the students, but,
right.
You know, if a child wants a sidearm hug, they will get one.
Aww. What has it been like working through the pandemic?
Honestly, I got a little jealous of everybody saying that they had to stay home. I really did. There was a brief period where we had the absolute shutdown where we didn't drive for 6 weeks, but the rest of it, I've been driving lunches to schools. I've been taking emergency care, you know, like healthcare workers, law enforcement, like during the riots and things like that. I was driving their kids to daycare.
So you were working the
summer
whole time.
Summer school routes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I have had a very busy summer.
So I'm trying to imagine the atmosphere on the bus, the mood on the bus during the pandemic. What comes to mind when you think of that and how it's changed?
When the pandemic started, you'd have kids that were afraid that they were going to get sick or that they were going to bring stuff home to their family. You know, I don't want grandma to get sick. Grandma lives in my house. Mm-hmm. So you'd have kids that would mask up, and then you'd have other kids. I mean, it's a lot like adults. Mm-hmm. They just think it's a bunch of hogwash. Why should I do this? This is just stupid. You know, I've heard things, you know, you can't have, you know, vaccinations because it's made out of babies. Like, seriously? Come on. Just a lot of fear that has been in there.
So you're overhearing the kids' conversations?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of it is parroting what they're hearing at home. It's, right. You know, it's a weird thing as a school bus driver. I get to know a lot of things about the neighborhoods that I drive in that the parents have no idea. Mm-hmm. They have no idea. I know when mommy has a boyfriend over. I know when the power goes out in their house. I know when someone's had a birthday. I know all sorts of stuff. And it's just simple observation. Mm-hmm. As far as the pandemic, I think we've reached an exhaustion with a lot of the kids. The kids would normally, you know, they get on the bus and you can imagine that happy, boisterous, sit, giggle with your friends. Instead, what I was seeing was kids would get on the bus, they would scoot into the window, and they would just stare out the window.
Mm.
That was hard.
Mm. And not staring out in a good way, like, let me just get my thoughts together. You sense they were just worried.
It was depression. Mm-hmm. It was depression. It was just exhaustion. Mm-hmm. And I think, sorry, I'm getting emotional. The kids have worked a lot harder than I think we adults realize. They see all of this, but they don't have the power that adults do to change their environment.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the wisdom yet. They don't have the experience. They don't know what is safe and what isn't safe to do in a pandemic, let alone on a school bus where you're sitting next to someone that could make your family sick. There's a lot of fear, so much fear. The talk that I hear among the drivers is that we've lost 75 out of our 200 drivers.
Wow. And so then what does that mean for the remaining drivers?
It's a lot of work. I put in 12-hour days. So we've been doing things, what I would call them splices and doubles. A double route is I would go pick up my middle school kids, take them home, come back to the middle school, pick up another school route, and then I'm late to the next elementary school. Or we would do what was splicing. So we would take a route that's missing a driver and take those stops and split them up to neighboring buses. But then you have problems with the culture on the bus changes. People don't understand how important that culture is.
Explain, because the kids don't know each other and they go to different schools? Or why is that a problem?
So imagine that middle schooler that wants to express their anger or their cleverness or sneakiness, and they have a brand new bus driver who doesn't know their name
mm-hmm.
and isn't going to take the time to write up a discipline report.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was covering one route for the middle school, and these kids would just act out. And I, you know, here's me, 70 kids on the route. Middle schoolers are not tiny little kids, and you've got three to a seat. And you've got kids that are busy jumping around and goofing around, throwing pencils and leaving garbage all over and things like that, and just distracting, disrespectful.
And Mary, you're driving.
One bus driver
allows. You're driving. You've got to watch the road and the other traffic.
Yeah, and I've learned through experience that pulling over on the side of the road to yell at them does not work. It never works. So I don't even leave the school until my bus is in order. I just won't even drive. You distract my driving, we don't go. It's that simple. Because my safety...
You talk to them.
Not my safety. Their safety, yes. Mm-hmm. Their safety is more important than getting home on time.
But as a human, you care about their emotional well-being because you're seeing it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And I have to take that into account, but I also have a timeline that I've got to keep. I've got to get to the next school on time so I don't have a student standing out on the sidewalk. Where's my bus driver? Mm-hmm. These kids need consistency.
Mary, we've heard so much about the labor shortage, the shortage of school bus drivers. Bus companies are having a hard time recruiting workers. The conditions you describe, I mean, it's understandable, but what do you think can be done?
I joke with other drivers today. Hey, I have a radio interview. And they're like, oh, hey, tell them we need better pay.
Better pay.
That's the number one thing I hear from other drivers. And currently, right now, I don't mind sharing my numbers. I get $20.50 an hour. Benefits are an issue. Unemployment is an issue for some. I'm not the main income earner in my household. I'm married with four kids. But some drivers are. We have single moms that they've got to make the rent. And when you're not working during those summer months, we're not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's part-time seasonal work, we don't get unemployment benefits in Minnesota.
You've talked about, you know, the challenges with the behavior of the kids on the bus, you know, to be expected. They're children. But are you also seeing bad behavior by parents or adult family members? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I would say that the parents' behavior actually is worse than the kids. I had a parent come to my bus just 2 days ago upset because their child is being placed on special ed transportation. It's a younger students, and they're just simply not ready to ride on a big bus. These kids are coming from these 5-point harness car seats, and then they get put on this giant 77-passenger bus.
Right.
And it's like, woo, let's go, it's a party. And this kid was walking up and down the aisle as well and driving, touching kids where they shouldn't, you know, just inappropriate touch, arguing, just all sorts of things. And the student just isn't ready. I wasn't told as the driver that there was going to be special needs busing for this student. I find out from the angry mom who's upset because a change has been made. And I'm like, I have no idea. I'm just here to pick your son up. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I get yelled at by the parent and clearly something's wrong. And so I'm mediating that. And all of the kids are curious in the back of the bus. They're standing up. What's going on? Why is there drama?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've had parents try to get on the bus. You know, I've had a parent try to jump me once.
Why would a parent try to get on the bus?
Well, the short story is their daughter lied to them and told them that I'd kick them off the bus, which is against policy. I can't do that. If a child comes to my bus and says, I need a ride to school and I'm going to that school, I will take them. The student had thrown a water bottle under a tree at the bus stop, and I was like, hey, go pick it up. Don't litter in your neighborhood. And they didn't want to do that. And so they stormed off and went home. And what do? I've got a bus full of kids, and they've left. So I don't know where the student is. I radio into the bus company and say, hey, can you have admin meet me at the school? And sure. So I pull up to the school, and there's a woman pacing up and down the sidewalk, and this woman tries to get onto my bus, swimming upstream. I actually was kind of entertained by this. She's trying to get on my bus at the same time as the kids are getting off, and the kids are all like, oh, it is going down. Bus driver, you're going to die.
Mary.
I'm fine. Yeah, you know, it's middle schoolers. You have to talk the talk. So I get her off the bus because you can't have parents on the bus because I don't know if you're a safe person or not.
Right.
And if I don't know you, you don't get on, period.
Right.
As we're talking with her and the principal, she is realizing that she's been lied to by her child. And I can tell by the glare, that icy look, that only a mom, that mom stare, as she's looking at her child in the car parked behind my bus.
Mm-hmm.
And
all right. Be safe. Be strong. Keep taking those hugs, Mary.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Mary Fosbick drives a school bus for one of the companies that contracts with the Anoka-Hennepin School District. I'll be talking with more essential workers this hour. But first, it is our fall member drive here at NPR. All right, let's go back to our conversation, Stephanie, as we talk with essential workers. We just heard from a school bus driver, and we want to bring our listeners in, too. We open up the phone lines. They are open. Are you someone who has worked on the front lines during the COVID-19 pandemic as an essential worker? I want to hear from you. How are you doing? What do you want people to know about your job right now? You can call us at 651-227-6000 to join this conversation. Again, that number is 651-227-6000. I have another guest on the line right now. We have Joanne Palmer, who is an environmental service worker at Methodist Hospital in St. Louis Park. Joanne has been cleaning rooms at the hospital for more than 30 years. And I first spoke to her on my show back in April of 2020. Joanne, so good to check back in with you. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
I'm doing okay. So, you know, Joanne, when we last spoke, it was the early months of the pandemic. And I want to play a clip of that conversation we had. And this is you describing what it was like to clean the rooms of COVID-19 patients after they had been discharged.
Well, a normally discharged room, we don't have to gown up. They have the PPE equipment on. But with a COVID-19 discharge, we have our gown on, our gloves, and they just give us a basic mask. They don't give us the N95 mask. So we go in there, we pretty much do it like we would do a normally daily, but we take more time to wipe off the areas because of the virus.
So, Joanne, what has changed since we last talked about your work there at Methodist Hospital?
What have changed? For sure, we have more PPE equipment. Matter of fact, I did a discharge this morning, and as I was proceeding to go to the room, I noticed that they have a lot of masks out now, and that back then they didn't have them out now, so they are more available for us to use them now in a COVID-19 room. So that have changed. We have, that's one thing that definitely have changed. Mm-hmm.
And so having better protective equipment, has that made the work a little less frightening, a little less stressful or not?
It makes it a little more, you feel a little more confident going into the room because you have your proper N95 mask to wear into the room. So you still is kind of cautious, but then it gives you a little more protection and you feel a little better having all the proper equipment when you go into those rooms.
So, Joanne, we've been hearing stories about how hospitals are overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients. What are you seeing there at your hospital? Is that the case there?
Same here. It's overwhelming with the COVID-19 patients. So the people who actually work on the floor, I only go on the floor when I have to do a discharge. Mm-hmm. You could see it in their face, the frustration, because you come out of one room. I'm speaking for an environmental service worker.
Right.
You come out of one room, then you go to a next room with a COVID patient, then you go to a next room. And all the time you're switching up your gown and everything, and you stand in the room a little longer with the N95 mask. It's kind of heavier than the surgical mask.
Right.
So it is kind of frustration when you have room after room after room after room, but you go in there and you do your best. So it's kind of tedious at times.
We hear a lot about healthcare workers burning out. Is this something that you're struggling with, burnout, or some of your colleagues?
Oh, yes. Some of the colleagues are actually on the floor. I was actually talking to a coworker. And they opened up a new area on the floor, and they was moving a lot of COVID patients on her side. And you could hear the frustration in her voice. And you're already working short of workers. And then you have all these patients, which it's not their fault of their own that they caught COVID and then in the hospital. So it's not saying that. But it is frustrating and tiresome that have to go through that day after day after day after day, and it can be overwhelming.
So you can hear it in their voice. Can you see it in people's faces as well?
You actually, since we have on a covering on our face, you can actually seriously see it in their eyes. Mm-hmm. It's so amazing that when your mouth is covered and your nose is covered, how you can look at a person's eye and you can see the frustration and the tiredness in their eyes. So, yeah, you can see it. It is wearing visibly through the eyes now.
So are you all experiencing some staff shortages in the, you know, the work that you do as part of, you know, one of the environmental workers and cleaning, but in other staff people, too? You know, are you seeing staff shortages among the nursing staff and other folks?
Across the board, all areas are short staff with workers, from dietary to transport to EBS, my department, to the nurses staff, nurses assistant. We work in short, but every day people show up and do their best with the staff that they have. So, yep, all across the board is a shortage.
And so what does that mean? Like longer shifts, overtime, or what happens?
Depends on the department. For us, it means overtime. For the nurses assistant and nurses, it means overtime too. I don't know about extra shift. When you pick up extra shift, it's like overtime. So a lot of overtime has been given out because of the shortage in the departments.
You sound very optimistic and encouraging. I would want to be your colleague. I want you on my team. But what keeps you going? What keeps you, heading into work every day with a sense of optimism and with energy?
What keeps me going? In the morning time, I try to get here early, and I try to quote, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I have to take the focus off myself and put it on the job that is at hand. And I just keep telling myself that you do have a moment that you can feel frustrated, but don't stay there too long. So like yesterday, I was frustrated, and I allowed myself to go there for a minute. Mm-hmm. Then I said, okay, Joanne, actually said to myself, okay, Joanne, now it's time for you to shift and think of something positive. So I give myself that moment to be frustrated, but I also give myself that moment to think positive or just quote scriptures or just think of something positive. So that's how I keep going.
We think of a lot and hear a lot about the experiences of doctors and nurses, but there are many other people who work in hospitals and are working hard like you. And I feel like they get overlooked sometimes. Do you feel that way?
Yep, because mostly when you hear on the news and stuff, they're talking about the nurses and doctors and stuff like that. But it's also it's like a body. One body with different parts to it. And we all one body, but we have the arms, we have the legs, we have the eyes, we have the mouth. And they all function and make it work, but it seems like they only focus on the hand part of it. And there's other parts of it, like dietary, EVS, transport, mm-hmm. People who transfer the patients to their appointments and stuff or stuff right. like that. So we do get overlooked, but we're part of it. So sooner or later, they will recognize that it takes a whole collective whole to make this work, not just the doctors and the nurses. It's a whole lot of other people.
Yes. Joanne, I want you to stay on the line with me because I'm going to take some phone calls, but I want to come back to you as well. Because we were asking you if you are an essential worker, what has the experience been like for you? How are you doing now, a year and a half, almost 2 years into this? Let's talk to Ryan in Minneapolis. And Ryan, what did you want to share with us?
Hi, my name is Ryan. I've been doing district childcare for every month of the pandemic. When schools first closed, the governor had an executive order to keep schools open so we could give childcare to the critical workers like the bus drivers or medical workers. And it's been a really great experience working with students. It's been a lot of ups and downs, a lot of changes. So we've just been kind of learning a lot. And I've been really fortunate that I've been able to be in person and working through all this and being with the kids just really, really has made the whole experience great, helping people get through stuff and learning fun challenges, like learning how to help students learn how to ride a bike while social distancing. You got to mm-hmm. help them not fall, but give them mm-hmm. their space. That's been a really great, great experience.
What keeps you going? What, keeps you energetic and optimistic, as we were just talking to Joanne about? Because I'm sure you have days where you feel low.
I think the coffee in the morning is a good trick. I listen to the radio on the way in. That helps me get the day going. I think just having great coworkers, the people that are really committed to being there, the optimistic students, everything's been really great. Just having kids happy mm-hmm. and figuring it out and having fun while trying to be safe.
All right. Thank you. That's Ryan in Minneapolis, working as a childcare assistant. Let's take another phone call in Minneapolis as we talk with essential workers. We've got Taya on the line. Good morning to you, Taya. What did you want to share with us?
Hi, good morning, Angela.
Hi.
Yes, I am a social worker for Hennepin County, and I specifically work with veterans experiencing homelessness. Mm. And obviously, as you know already, there's a huge need. In the last year, I think my team has housed over 400 people. And it's a job that has recently even escalated in terms of, the eviction moratorium lifting and being able to, people being able to sort of lose their housing even more often than they were before. So it's a job that is needed and something that I really enjoy and kind of fell into because of COVID.
It sounds stressful, but yes, it is essential. So Taya, what keeps you going on the days where you're feeling a little low? What keeps you encouraged?
Knowing that we have the tools and the team to be able to help these folks get through this, mm-hmm. This too shall pass is kind of one of the things that I say, and mm-hmm. help my clients really just know that there's some hope out there, and with the team we can see them being housed, and that is the biggest joy, and what keeps me going, knowing. Seeing someone get their keys to their apartment, and maybe it's the first time they've had an apartment in 12 years. It's like nothing else.
All right. That's Taya in Minneapolis. Thank you. Thank you for the phone calls that we've received so far as we've talked with essential workers. Joanne, you're still there at Methodist Hospital.
Yes.
We heard from a childcare worker. We just heard from a social worker. What do you want people to know about working in a hospital right now?
What I would like people to know that we're still here, we're still working hard, and just have the support of the people when they enter into the hospital is like that we're here to do our best. And when we walk into these doors, we give our 100% of what we're doing. It's just that we're human beings and we're in a hospital that's overwhelmed with COVID patients, but we're doing our job as a team, as a collective whole. So just let people know when you walk in here, you're going to get your best. We're going to do our best. Even though we're short staffed, they would never know that we're short staffed. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to make you feel as comfortable as possible, and that just support us when you walk in. Say hi. Put a smile on your face, or I mean, and they say smile with your eyes now. So I guess smile with eyes.
Yes, yes. I love that. Joanne Palmer, I know you've got to get back to work. An environmental service worker at Methodist Hospital in St. Louis Park. She's been cleaning rooms there at the hospital for more than 30 years. And it's good to check in with you again. I appreciate hearing from you. Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you for inviting me back, and you have a great day.
All right. You too. All right, let's get back to our conversation with essential workers. One more guest to talk to, but we're also taking your phone calls. I want to hear from you, too. Call us. There's still time. Are you someone who has worked on the front lines during the COVID-19 pandemic as an essential worker? How are you doing? What do you want people to know about your job right now? You can call to join this conversation at 651-227-6000. That's the number if you want to talk to me. 651-227-6000. Call us. Okay, our next guest. We have Adam Evanstad on the line with us, and Adam is a union representative with UFCW Local 1189 Duluth office. UFCW Local 1189 represents frontline workers, including retail and grocery store workers, healthcare workers, and packing house workers. A lot going on there, Adam. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Hi. So, Adam, your union represents a rather large swath of fields, as I've listed there. So I want to focus for a moment, though, on long-term care facilities, the workers in long-term care facilities. We know that the labor shortages are dramatically affecting long-term care facilities. What are you hearing from your union members who work at those places?
Well, I'm glad that you asked that. Because I know that this has been pretty prevalent in the news lately. Everybody knows that we have a shortage of workers, but I don't know that people truly understand what that looks like to be quite that short. Mm-hmm. I have many members that are working in excess of 160 hours a pay period. So that's 80 hours a week, not 80 hours over a 2-week period, 80 hours in 1 week.
And most people would work
16-hour shifts.
Most people would work 40 hours a week, right? And so we're talking like double shifts every day?
Double shifts every day, and sometimes they're doing that 6 to 7 days a week. I have one instance of a person that put in 230 hours over the course of 2 weeks.
How is that even possible? Like mentally and physically?
Well, you work 16 hours every – well, it isn't. It's not sustainable. You know, people do suffer adverse effects from this. I've had employees that have put in 16s for 5 or 6 days in a row, and then they're forced to call in sick because they suffer migraines. I had one person that said, I can't drive because I can't see. My migraines are so bad. And that's after working, you know, 80 hours in a row during a single week. It's understandable that the human body breaks down at that point. Unfortunately, these are the situations that also exacerbate the situation because now that facility is down another worker, another person that they would have had there. And the people that are remaining are just going to have to work a little bit harder. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, could you describe the work that we're talking about? What are they doing? Because a lot of this is, communicating with the folks who are living there and having, you know, good social skills. You know, you're not just, you know, sitting at a desk typing at a keyboard.
Yeah, so that's, again, that's kind of comes down to what does it look like when you're that short-staffed? And when you've got your family members or you've got the elderly in these facilities, they're expecting to have care. They're expecting mm-hmm. to have a human touch. They're expecting to have somebody spend time with them. It's not possible all of the time to take care of everyone in the way that they used to. Call lights will be on for hours. You'll hear people mm-hmm. calling for help. And our members are desperately trying to provide that help. And that just adds to their mental instability, quite frankly, when they can't do the job and provide the dignity that they used to be able to provide.
So what are employers doing to help? You're a union representative. What's happening on the other side? Mm-hmm. Do they understand the challenges? And are they trying to do something to make it easier for workers?
I believe that they understand that the staffing crisis is real. I mean, they certainly are on the same page. Nobody's looking to pay 8 hours of overtime to anybody every single day. And at the end of the day, they are in the business of caring for people. And they recognize that there are challenges there. They're trying to hire as much as they can. But right now, when you bring a new person into a situation like this, where they're having to work 160 hours a week, it's near impossible to keep them long term. So what we're seeing is more people are actually leaving than are coming in the doors, regardless of efforts to hire.
All right. So let's look at your members who work in grocery stores and who work in retail. I recently witnessed, I was at a grocery store in line, and I witnessed a customer in front of me have a meltdown. And, the store worker, do his best to be professional and to try to de-escalate the situation. And it was hard. I just, I'm just wondering what you're hearing from grocery store workers.
You know, this is something that we've seen more or less since the beginning of the pandemic. It has lessened a little bit. But as we all know, there are a lot of frustrations out there. A lot of people feel differently politically about how the pandemic should be handled. And unfortunately, when you run into a frontline worker, they tend to be the face of some of your frustrations. Mm-hmm. I would definitely ask those customers to understand that this is a person just trying to do their job and to not take out their frustrations on that person that's attempting to serve you.
Mm. And what about other types of retail workers? What seems to be their challenges, or what are you hearing from them?
Yeah, so the way things are different from the way they used to be is just kind of that added component of, will I get sick? Am I going to bring something home to my family? We have a lot of members that are immunocompromised, so it's definitely adding some added anxiety there. And we have many more members that have immunocompromised persons in their household. So just that day-to-day thought that I might be bringing something home to my family. You know, our people don't have the option of working from home. So this is a constant issue for them, worrying about whether I'm going to get sick or whether I'm going to get somebody at my home sick.
In the introduction, I mentioned that UFCW Local 1189 there in the Duluth office, you also represent packing house workers. So describe these workers, their jobs, what they're doing, and how they are experiencing this, prolonged pandemic.
Yeah, so packing house workers are doing everything from bringing the animal in to processing it and getting it out to wholesalers. The problem inherent with their job related to COVID is just the confines that they work in. It's really kind of a perfect place for COVID to spread, and early on we saw a lot of that. A lot of that's being tightened up now because the employers have taken into account just how easily this thing can spread in an environment like that. So they're trying to distance people as much as possible. And we are seeing rates of infection drop significantly from what they were earlier in the pandemic. But it's in an environment like that where you're shoulder to shoulder, it's just an added danger.
All right. I want you to stay on the line with me, Adam, as we take a phone call from one of our listeners who's been holding on. And I'll come back to you, Adam, with one more question. But first, I want to hear from Ben in Minneapolis, who has called in. Ben, what did you want to share with us about just working through this prolonged pandemic as an essential worker?
Oh, yeah. Hi. So I currently work for an internet service provider. Mm-hmm. And I've been very thankful to have a job this entire time, even though we've been on mandatory overtime most of the time.
Mandatory overtime. What does that mean?
Yes.
Elaborate.
It means that we're forced to do overtime. Like, we don't have a choice.
Okay. Because every...
go ahead.
Everybody needs internet. I mean, it's crucial, right?
Exactly. And that's kind of been the frustrating part, because as an essential worker, I've never seen one billboard, one yard sign, one radio commercial or anything, thanking us. And it's just, I don't want to take away from everybody else that gets recognition that needs it, but there are those of us that are essential workers that don't get any recognition at all. And without the internet, no one would have been able to work from home.
And the school children relying on virtual classes to stay on track.
Exactly.
And so how are you dealing with the overtime? That's a lot of hours, like being attentive and problem solving. How have you managed it?
I mean, it's good when, you know, it's, the paycheck is nice, but, you know, when I have to be away from my wife and my kid every night, you know, I don't get home until she's basically going to bed. You know, it sucks, but, you know, it is what it is.
And your colleagues, have you been able to turn to each other for support, or do you find, is that where you find people who understand, or what helps you get through it, Ben?
Yeah, we can vent with each other, you know, just saying how frustrating it is having to work all of this overtime.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And I don't know, something that helps me get through it is the fact that I have been lucky enough to have a job, and I know that there are millions out there that mm-hmm. don't have a job because of the pandemic, so I'm at least thankful for that. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for sharing your story with us. That's Ben in Minneapolis. And Adam, as I come back to you, you know, as a union representative, sustainability, this overtime issue, that can't go on for another year, right? It's just not sustainable.
It can't. And quite frankly, at the rate that we're losing folks, I don't think that it's sustainable. We're certainly in search of solutions. I know the employers are in search of solutions. We would love the opportunity to speak with the governor. I believe we're working on that. But quite frankly, we used the National Guard early on in this process to supplement help at long-term care facilities.
I remember that, and, but they're not no longer doing that.
They are no longer doing that. It really was a program that was just meant to get us through a lot of the COVID outbreaks. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we are going through that again with the Delta variant. So even at this time where we don't have enough workers to do the day-to-day, now they're experiencing another run of COVID-19 in their buildings, mm-hmm. which is increasing the amount of people that are out sick, the amount of work that has to be done. I do think it's time to explore some more extreme options, and the National Guard is one thing that that we're advocating for.
So you're in solution mode, looking ahead to getting through this winter. What are the solutions?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we have to be. That would be the main one temporarily. Mm-hmm. The problem is right now we've got a lot of people that need to be taken care of. The reality is that. Right. A facility that can't take care of all the people that are there, okay, so you reduce the amount of people that you have there. Well, I mean, where are they going to go?
Right.
It's not really a long-term solution to reduce the amount of people that you care for. We've gotten to an untenable place, and we are our ears are open to any solutions that anybody might have. We're trying to partner with other unions, try to partner with the employers, but this is a situation that does need to be addressed.
Well, Adam,
now.
You have helped shed a lot of light on it. I thank you for your time talking with us here at NPR today. That's Adam Evanstad, a union representative from the UFCW Local 1189 Duluth office. That union represents frontline workers, including retail and grocery store workers, healthcare workers, and some of those meatpacking facility, packing house workers. Thank you, Adam, for your time. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.